Hello, everybody. Welcome back to You Can't Win. This is Tom here, and I'm joined by Donald as usual. We are going to be covering some more of your questions. So take it away, Donald.
Yep. So we're going to finish up with one of the ones on the Discord we had from Tiago. What do you think of mixed irony relationships? By this, I mean a critically irony exposed person with a normie partner.
So I had some personal experience with this. I, for a very short while, just like a couple months or something, dated a girl who had no real sense of, I don't want to say she had no sense of humor, but I could not find a way to make a joke without upsetting her, basically. Like, she was like into like Macklemore and like her friend's improv stuff, which was just like goofy. It was just, I don't know. Not a good pair, really. Yeah. But that ended in a very funny way. At one point, I was sort of just like sick of stepping on eggshells and stuff. So I was just like trying to explain to her how funny works, basically.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about this appearance that Patrice O'Neill made on I think it was like a Fox talk show or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was him and someone from some sort of feminist organization or whatever, and they were talking about Opie and Anthony getting in trouble for something, and he was explaining this joke, or I mean, it's not even really a joke, it's just like this sex move that is funny to tell about. So it's called the angry pirate, and what you do is you come in the girl's eye and then kick her in the shin, and what she'll do is she'll grab her eye and then start hopping around on one leg going arr, you know. So yeah. So his point with that was like, that's funny, but that's not, obviously you don't do that, you know, like that's so I told her about that, and she literally like started to cry, and she was just like,
oh man,
why would you do that? I'm like, I didn't do that, it's a joke. And she's like, but why would you even tell me that? I was like, okay, we're done. This isn't gonna work.
Yeah, I guess you sort of lucked out now that you're on a very close irony level. I think that's something that will be interesting for me to explore in the future in terms of trying to find a match that works with irony level, because I'm pretty high on irony charts, and I don't know. I feel like the most likely outcome is I would find a wife that is at a higher irony level and weirder than me. That's what it's going to happen. Is that I'll be like, oh man, how am I going to introduce someone to all the lore? And then I'll meet someone that's like, I don't know, off the charts or something. So
yeah. Someone who will respect your status in the trolling community.
Yeah. Okay, so now we've got some anon questions. We've got a lot, but just, you know, we try to narrow them down a bit, and I think this will be so the first one for Tom is, if you have kids, would you give them Muslim names or take them to a mosque?
I would definitely consider it. Like, it would be in the running, but I don't think I would exclusively consider Muslim names.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would try to be, to take them to the mosque and stuff, and
sure,
Quran lessons on Sundays or whatever.
Yeah. Are there like near equivalent names that are still like Arabic, but kind of sound the same or something like that? Like,
oh, sure. Like Adam,
yeah, that's
Mikhail,
true.
Ibrahim, Yusuf,
mm-hmm.
Yaqub. That would be a good one.
So this one's a critical question. Hey, I was just listening to your part one of your Pizzagate is Real series, and I went to the site that you recommended at the end for Stefan Dutroux, etc. Are you aware about the rest of the content on that site? For instance, it has a list of true conspiracies, which includes the endless elite push third world immigration agenda, and has very detailed sections on subjects such as IQ differences across races and how physical brain structure relates to differences in crime rates. I only just started listening to the podcast and enjoyed it so far, but I mean, are you guys fash?
Oh my God. I hate when people say fash.
Yeah.
Like, are you so busy you can't just well, say the other syllable.
They might be like British or something. I don't know. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt.
Well, yeah, I don't like the way the Brits pronounce anything or say anything. Okay. So they're probably talking about that IGSP or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
I think we sort of warn people that that site's pretty goofy and stuff, and that it's really useful only as a repository for information on specifically on the Dutroux affair.
Yeah.
I don't think any either us or Professor Pizzagate would sanction some of the other things on that site.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty easy to ignore it. You just, like, it's organized fairly well. You just click on the stuff that you actually want to look at. It's a really funny looking site. It's got the art style is really, there's a certain art style that these like anti-ZOG, anti-Semitic conspiracy theory guys take.
Okay.
And it really kind of hits that perfectly.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I was even thinking when you were saying that it's almost like a throwback that like even your explanation and also just the question, sort of a throwback to like early internet sort of stuff where there was a lot of like repositories of things kind of thing where it would just be like a website that had all different types of text accounts and stuff, whatever. And yeah, it would always be like, you know, half of it would just be like totally extreme, crazy stuff kind of thing. And then you would also find sort of interesting things there too. Like the Maoist ones are still like that. Some of them, you know, there's just like banned thought and stuff where it's like, you know, they repost stuff from India that's banned in India and stuff. And like, I don't know. I find that stuff interesting because it's like, yeah, that's kind of a lost art. Because now if you Google things or whatever, it's just always just people that game the results. And it's always like a blog that's just parasitic on search results and stuff. It's never like something like that where it's just interesting kind of weird articles all, you know?
Yeah.
A big thing with that used to be like stuff like hacking or like anarchist cookbook sort of things. I don't know. That used to be a fun thing to look around and I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah. So, and no, I am not a fascist. But,
yeah. You decide. I don't give a shit. If you call me a fascist if you want to, I don't care. Whatever. Yeah.
Sure. What's a favorite troll post that you've seen someone else pull online?
Oh, okay. So the first thing that comes to mind immediately is FSAD. Like FSAD stands for a bunch of different things. He changes.
Yeah, fish tier a dough.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
So he posted a thing on something awful, which was, I only have foggy details of this, but he posted something about, like, he was a guy in the Peace Corps, went to Africa and was teaching them about Maoism or something like that. And I think he was pretending that he had started sending them money to like arm their resistance or something like that. It was really funny. I don't really remember the specifics now, but that definitely stands out. FSAD is a very funny guy. I'm still in touch with him, and he actually is pretty keen to come on the show. So.
Oh, really? That's great. Yeah, yeah, we should have him on for sure.
Yeah, he just like sends me ideas for like stuff he wants to do on the show sometimes.
Oh, really? Yeah. I guess for me, I'm gonna say stuff from forums that people have not probably like. There's like a politics forum which I posted on sometimes when I was banned on something awful. I would just kind of flip to a free forum and just, I don't know, like talk to people there instead for a bit. And so there was this guy who I thought he had the best sort of troll persona, or like just a solid one. So this was maybe like 15 years ago, 10 years ago or something. And his persona was that he was personally a communist. Like he thought that people should live together in community and, you know, give away all their property and just, you know, whatever, just like the, you know, the full basic thing like that, right? But he philosophically agreed with Ayn Rand and like everything about that, like objectivist libertarian philosophy. So he was like, you know, libertarian communist kind of thing, but it was libertarian plus communist. So he would get into arguments with everyone. And it was almost like, it was the first time that I saw someone's personality act as just like a function where he could just like eat up people through things. Cause it would, the forum got like a lot of people that just randomly joined and then kind of went through the ringer with them, because he would, you know, so you got to think that these are people that are not like used to arguing constantly online, that would kind of come into it. but they might have like a strong political viewpoint kind of thing. They might be like, oh, I'm a conservative. I love Thatcher and stuff or whatever, right? And then he would just be like, just tear into them. And yeah, I don't know. It was just funny because it would make anyone extremely angry because it would tend to, because people on, you know, political forums tend to go to one side or the other, I guess, a lot of the time. It's like a polarization a lot of the time.
Yeah.
They couldn't accept the fact that he agreed with them mostly on one thing and then just ridiculed them for the other side of it then. Like he never, no one was comfortable with it, right? So like, you know, they'd be like a conservative guy and then they'd be like, yeah, but communism's wrong because it's stealing property. It's like, no. I accept that property is like inviolable, whatever, you know, like you've got to keep it, but you should give it away or something. You know, I don't know. It seemed to really kind of break people's brains. I was kind of impressed by that. But there was another guy too, that was like he's actually a white Muslim guy that lived in Montreal.
Oh yeah.
That was like, and he came up with stuff that is still pretty great. Like he said that people in Alberta should pay reparations to Quebec because Quebec helps basically Canada's brand a lot. Because otherwise people would just think of Alberta and like all the ruins from the environment from oil production and stuff. So he was like, you know, Alberta owes Quebec money and stuff. Anyways, but the thing is that people from Alberta, I don't know, it's a very, very precise and way of just making them go extremely angry. I think because like their whole identity really in Alberta, the conservative movement, is based on the idea of the opposite, that like Quebec owes mm-hmm. Alberta money. Anyway, so it was another one where I was impressed. So that was kind of like early stuff where I learned troll junk. Yeah, I guess. But
yeah, that move of like combining two polar opposites and then,
yeah,
you know, someone might agree with one side and then strongly disagree with the other, but like, yeah, you're representing both. That's a good move.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next question is, the pedophile cabal is horrible, and I don't support them in any way, but can we admit that their internal title symbols are cool, e.g. pizza slice with a spiral?
I don't know. The all the goat's head stuff that the Satanists do is kind of cool, I guess.
Yeah. No, I don't think the symbols are cool. Spiral's not a cool symbol, I don't think. I don't know. Just in general.
They do like the silly little hearts and the all that kind of, like, I don't know. That's dumb.
Yeah. And that temple they had on the island didn't look that great either. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
weak.
What is the difference between the imperialism, colonialism, engaged in by the European powers in America and some of the more brutal empires in other parts of the world? Example, the Mongols, China, some Muslim states like Turkey, etc. The reason I ask this is, counterfactual deployed by conservatives in order to whitewash the crimes of imperial powers and say that the imperial powers of the West and Christian nations in general are less brutal than previous empires, even though they have faults. So yeah, I think the broad question just is, yeah, the comparison of like, why is European colonialism not just another form of, you know, why is it not just trivial because there's all these other historical examples?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think it really is a issue of scale. That's the really thing that sticks out in my mind first and foremost, is the scale that Western colonialism, and really I don't really think of things like the Mongols or like various imperial oppressions from pre-modern times as being colonial necessarily, because colonialism it sort of implies like extirpating an entire people and an entire culture, or completely dominating them and subjugating them. And that did happen. Like, say the Ottomans, you know, did that with like different nomadic people and whatnot, but not the brutality of Western colonialism really stands out to me. And I mean, that seems a little weird to say when you compare it to like, again, like the Mongols, but you had to try really hard to do that before the modern period. In the modern period, you could kind of just decide that's what you wanted to do. I mean, I know a lot of this stuff is contested, but if you read some of the things that were going on in like New Spain and stuff, like just mountains of bodies and stuff by the silver mines and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
That's just, I mean, it boggles the mind. I think it's a little bit easier to even just like imagine, like, okay, well, this imperial power kicks this tribe around and then, you know, uses them to force out another tribe, and that's all pretty bad. But just the level of brutality and violence and stuff is just, even today, it's hard to really understand.
Yeah, and I would say that my answer would be a bit different because, so when people say like imperialism in, say, like a Leninist sense or something like that, it's almost like an analogy. It's not really saying, it's not saying it's imperialism in the same way that, say China expanded within its own territory, within a bunch of things. It's sort of, it's similar, but it's more kind of an analogy. And what it is, it's like a historical process. That's the difference. The difference is that, you know, European powers spread into the New World and that helped finance expansion elsewhere and technological change and stuff. And that culminated in this kind of, you know, the race for Africa and all that kind of thing. Like, so it's the difference is that it's like a single sweeping century long thing, you know, where it's one process, like it's one overarching thing that's happened, which is all sort of connected in one way to create this global market that is dominated by finance capital. So that's kind of like the Leninist explanation, I would say, that's the difference is. So the actual violence and stuff is, that's, even if there wasn't violence in the sense that, you know, just mass murder and stuff, it would still be an imperialist process. So it's not really the brutality as much as it's like, you know, just the logic of it.
Yeah, the way it reconfigured the world sort of a thing.
Yeah. But I mean, if people are saying, and the other thing is that I think, yeah, I don't know. I do think that there's like a childish sort of thing, which I think everyone goes through that phase where it's, I don't know. I call it, kind of think of it as like punditry politics kind of thing where you're like, I don't know, where people are like, oh, you know, well, if the United States is bad, then isn't the Taliban bad or something like that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, it's these comparisons that people make between things, or like, I don't know, like if this party is in power, then deficits were lower and stuff, you know, all that kind of like these kind of gotcha comparisons, which really don't tell you much about anything kind of thing, you know, like, I think that that's part of it too, is where a lot of people, when they're arguing these kind of things, they're not really, you're not trying to prove that Europe is bad or something like that kind of thing. Right. Like, it's not like, that's not the goal. The goal is to understand the sweep of the process. And I guess maybe if people think there's some unique thing about the European powers that makes them worse than other people. But I don't think that's true. I think that everyone's pretty much the same anywhere.
Yeah.
That'd be my spiel on that.
One thing that, yeah, I found interesting when I was studying this stuff was looking at like the Russian Empire and the way that things changed. I don't really want to point to the Soviet period as necessarily the thing that characterizes that change, because I think these changes were also happening in the, like, the very late period of the Russian Empire, like the last 50, 70, 80 years or so. But just to look at the way that they, like, their presence in Central Asia and just the way things worked, like, it was very hands off, and it wasn't so much that they wanted it to be that way. It's just that they couldn't really do much beyond sort of arrange with the local leaders a sort of vassal relationship and whatnot. But that was fairly tolerable compared to like what came later. And, you know, I don't want to argue that the Soviet Union was imperialist or not. That's not really my point. But just to point to the fact that the tools and the ability that modernity enables you to, it just lets you do things a lot faster, a lot more intensely. And I think that's, colonialism was not only the development of that ability, but also like it enabled that on a much grander scale. Like it created it and also spread that around so that,
sure,
like every single relation of oppression became much more intense as a result.
Yeah. And that, I think the other thing is that people can find analogies for this within nations that we might otherwise not, you know, like in France, say, like in the country itself, obviously before French Revolution and sort of, you know, before the, especially the sort of modern period in general, like you had these very distinct cultures within it, right? There's no really much of a common culture, just very, very different, you know, like almost proto nations within it. Mm-hmm. And then there was that centrifugal kind of force where it's just, it created this one nation out of it and kind of tried to stamp out these other cultures within it. So that happened all over the world. So you can kind of, even though there's this overarching process of the whole world kind of being sucked into this global market, like there's also within countries like India, you know, the relationships between center and periphery in India are some of the most biggest conflicts in the world right now, kind of thing, you know, especially even if you hold aside the question of Pakistan or even Kashmir, like within India proper, like there's all these, you know, with the forests being controlled, you know, and the fight between corporations and, you know, local villages and stuff. So I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things where you can kind of see these logics play out no matter where you're looking at, even though most visible because it's between countries tends to be between countries kind of thing. So,
yeah. But, I mean, I think it you tend to look at the national rivalries and stuff because they have flags and they sort of present themselves as world players and stuff. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So anyways, let's move on to the next question. This isn't that original. You guys ever notice how sexualized things have been? The Amazon wishlist stuff, foot fetishes, children's cartoons. Do you think that sort of climate has led to some of the pedophilia epidemic we've seen?
I don't think there's a direct connection, like one of those things leads to the other. But I do think there is a just an unhealthy relationship with sexuality in society. And I think that has resulted in a lot of these different things. I think stuff like the Amazon wishlist is not a big deal, but like the cartoons are, seem to me like a symptom of this kind of stuff where it's like, we think it's important to put this, like to educate children this way. Like that seems very strange to me. I'm not really sure why that is considered like a decent thing to do or whatever. I mean, like that one show on Netflix or whatever, Big Mouth or whatever it's called, Nick Kroll show.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I mean, I've seen it, but I don't know what the deal is with it. I don't know. Is it just like...
I haven't seen it either. It just seems to be very overtly sexualized in a gross way, like it's trying to be gross. Like, and maybe there's like... There's this sort of weird thing where it's seen as transgressive and therefore progressive and a good thing to do that kind of stuff just because it like annoys conservatives or something. And that seems really short-sighted to me. And I don't know. I tend to think it's not as big a deal as a lot of people tend to think. Like I think most people, you know, if they're exposed to certain things when they're kids, will kind of just be like, oh, that's weird, and not like it. Or if they did like it, they'll kind of grow out of it. And it, I don't know. There's like a very small percentage of the population that I think it's like actually warped by that kind of stuff. But it just seems like it points to like some kind of weird neurosis that we have to want to do that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess for me, I feel like it's hard to guess how that's actually changed over time. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Because I feel like it's one of those things too, where hiding it doesn't necessarily mean that there was a healthier relationship with it in the past kind of thing. Right. So yeah. I think that's part of it. And I also feel like it's probably different in different parts of the world and different subcultures and stuff. Like we might see a lot more than a lot of other people do just because of we're in sort of like an irony enclave on Twitter and stuff, you know, like where we just see a whole bunch of just horrible junk through our feeds all the time. I noticed that a lot when I was commuting a lot, because I'd just be commuting for like 3 hours each way each day. I noticed that because I would catch myself just scrolling my feed and stuff, and just like, you know, just awful stuff, a lot of it that you just kind of skim over because you're not like focused on it or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
just people posting shock pictures or something, you don't really notice it. And then you kind of go, wait, I'm sitting beside someone that could like see this. I shouldn't, you know, I should be conscious of it enough that I'm not like, you know, forcing them to see junk on the way to work that I just don't register anymore. So I think that's, you know, that is a concern in some ways, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always some kind of push to like, for people to express themselves a little more than they feel they're allowed to. Like that seems to be something that has been a constant, at least for the last 100 plus years or so.
Yeah.
I mean, and that doesn't seem like such a bad thing to me. I think people should be trying to, like, you know, push for more freedom of expression and all that kind of thing. But to me, that's not really the, if there is a problem, that's not really the problem. The problem would be like, why is this what we're trying to talk about? Why yeah. do you want to do that so much? I do feel a little weird about, like, I feel like younger and younger, especially girls, are dressing in more like sexualized ways. And that seems like, I don't think it's really like, I don't think it registers to them that way like that, but it just seems like that's not a good sign, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So the next question I thought was actually a tough one, and it is, as far as you can tell, what is a good feature of your own chosen religion that you think is lacking in the others?
Okay, well, let me answer this this way. I think that one thing that Islam has that I really appreciate and that I don't see so much in other religions is that it really gives you like a very practical and detailed like way of living. Like it kind of scales from things of cosmology and theology, like at a really big scale, all the way down to like which hand do you eat with and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that all seems like really irrelevant and even a bit silly, but as a unified whole, it kind of it's really a big, I don't know, I think it's cool. Like the fact that you can kind of connect just that, like just the fact that you would eat with your right hand and not your left hand, and that takes on its own meaning. I think it kind of really gives a lot of meaning to very mundane things in your life. And that can make, you know, your life doesn't, your day doesn't need to be especially exciting or whatever to be like full of meaning and stuff like that. It gives you a lot of ways to connect with God like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought your answer would be sort of slightly more obvious one too, which is just my answer is sort of the flip side of that. It's just the idea of the incarnation, like the idea that Jesus is not just a man, but also God kind of thing. I thought, because I know that's like obviously a sticking point in Islam. It's not what you believe, but like for me, it is, it's again, it's a way of, it's like a unity thing. And again, it sort of like ties it all together in my mind kind of thing. That's how it makes logical sense to me, is like that's the unifying feature. So that would probably be a different one. And again, it's not like that would be kind of the feature of the actual ideology. But I think that you did point to something different too, which is just the feature in terms of not really theology, but just how it relates to life. And I would say maybe for that, I don't know. I think something about, I'm not sure if this is even true, but maybe something like the whole tradition and like sweep of history seems different to me, maybe just because it's my own culture, you know, background kind of thing. So stuff like I don't know, like it just seems like it's much more rooted in my experience in that kind of, you know, like the saints and you tying it back to the Old Testament kind of stuff, and that just there's more of a continuity in my mind than, so for Islam, that's one of the problems that I have in relating to it, is just because I think that's just a natural thing for me, because I was growing up in this thing, is that like Islam doesn't resonate with me in the same ways, because I didn't have the same cultural cues kind of thing. I think if I grew up in an Islamic society, I think that would be different, where, you know, like the, like I'm sure that like different quotes from the Quran and Hadith and stuff are sort of like lyrical, you know what I mean? Like they mesh with the culture, you hear it a lot more kind of thing, where in Western culture, it's much more, you know, Bible verses and quotes and stuff.
Yeah, so, that's something that I do feel like I am missing a little bit, because Islam is like a quote foreign religion to my native culture, you know, but I never really felt like Christianity was that for me either, because like my family was not religious at all. And I grew up in non-Christian cultures for the most part.
Yeah.
And it never struck me as like more, it never made like sense as being like, oh, this is what my culture does any more than any other religion, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so in that way, I felt like, I can kind of see that, but that's one reason why Islam kind of called to me more than anything else.
Yeah. Is the hyper left that Donald explained somehow related to the Toilers Party. So, yeah, this is a more important question. So, yes. So the Toilers Party is it is a party that encompasses all existing and historical and future socialist parties. It's sort of like a unifying party that, and this is through the process of socialist inversion, which adopts all of these movements as its own. And historically, which all of these other parties, because they're just fragments of the Toilers Party, are partially socialist and partially revisionist. And in the future, they'll all be redeemed through the creation of socialism. And also through this process of socialist inversion, you have no choice in this matter. There's no negotiation. You have already agreed to it in the future because of the success of the Toilers Party in the future. So that's just my basic answer on that. It's pretty one-on-one stuff, but okay. Do you guys feel more or less compelled to form consistent worldviews after starting and maintaining a podcast?
I don't feel any differently about that. I've never really, like, I try to have some kind of coherent worldview, I guess, but it's not like that's the goal. It's just that I want things to make sense, so I try to piece things together a way that makes sense. But like having a podcast doesn't really affect that. If anything, I like to try to like explore my ideas in ways that I can maybe change my mind and stuff like that, like almost critique them by laying them out in the open sort of thing.
Yeah, I would say something sort of similar is that I do feel less compelled now in the fact that I feel like I'm actually changing my views on a lot of things. Not a lot, but just feeling more flexible about them now.
Because of the podcast?
Yeah, because just as we've been talking through different things and wanting to, you know, sometimes you say something and then you kind of realize that it doesn't really ring true while you're saying it. And then you kind of want to revisit it. Or, we've talked a lot about different books that have influenced us and premiums and stuff. And we kind of went through things that it kind of helped me remember things that I thought were important or things that weren't important. I mean, and also just in general, time has kind of moved on in some ways where I feel like in Canada and the US and UK, I feel like I'm kind of, like, say, the mainstream of the left in those countries, where I feel like in some ways it's catching up with where I was kind of thing or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the sort of things I used to get really annoyed about and post a lot about are cliche now almost. Like, they're just... they've already been hashed to death now and just they're out there and it's not really my place to worry about that stuff anymore. It's like, oh, okay. You know, it's like there's so many things that say 5 years ago I thought were really funny and interesting and stuff, like finding good things to say about North Korea or something that, or whatever, you know, just stuff like that, where it's not even like it's been overdone now to the point where I don't even care about that now anymore or whatever, you know? So there's so many things like that now, where the culture has kind of moved on. I've been left to wait.
I feel like a lot of the like jokes we used to make in that vein are now, like, there are people who sincerely argue things like that go way beyond the joke. Like, there's no point in even making the joke because there's someone out there that you saw last week because it went viral or whatever that just said something even crazier than you even thought was funny. So
yeah, and it's not just that, but there's like dozens of people who form their entire worldview around that or something. Yeah. Like, there's like, you know, you go to their website and it's like, I am the North Korea defender or something. And you're like, okay, well, I don't know. I don't know. It just feels distasteful. I mean, this is going to sound a bit silly, but some ways the Syrian war stuff kind of soured me on that too, because it's like, how long can you just be contrarian just for the sake of it kind of thing about something that horrible kind of thing? You know what I mean? Like, it just emptied my interest in that. And yeah, I don't know. Just a lot of stuff around that. Also, the other thing is that because we kind of had, you know, somewhat respectful kind of conversations and stuff about religion and things, it makes me kind of want to calm down a bit and just learn the details of things instead of just learning the, you know, just chatting about it, like actually get into it a bit more and get out there. And I don't know, like, I keep thinking of things like ways I could volunteer on like the board of directors or whatever, or like local finance committees or something like that for different things. You know what I mean? Not some extreme, dramatic, silly thing or something. So
yeah. Well, that seems good.
All right. So the next question is kind of related to my answer there. It's do you guys have any experience volunteering or giving to charities?
I don't have a lot. I give Zakat every year, and that's pretty much it that I can think of. I don't know. I've always been such a lazy bum, you know.
Do you think in the future that might change or something like that?
Yeah, if Tabs gets into it and drags me out to something every once in a while, yeah, I could see that changing. I don't know. I'm just like not a very social person. Like I never have been, and as I get older, that becomes less and less of a thing that I'm at all interested in. And that seems to be like the thing that would kind of keep me engaged, really. I'm also a very inconsistent person when it comes to like maintaining effort on something. So like the idea of like volunteering for something seems like such a, I would get to the phase of like, oh, this is such a chore, like the second week, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm just not, I'm not that kind of guy. That's a, you know, it's a personal flaw. I'm not trying to say that that's an excuse, but that's what it is.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel like because I haven't really been able to work much in the last while, like I used to tend to find ways that I could still get out of the house kind of thing. And one of the ways of was volunteering here and there for things. And even in Montreal, when I wasn't doing as well, I did sort of like show up a lot. I was technically volunteering, but I was mostly just kind of showing up and listening to people for like board meetings and stuff or whatever for like a small environmental organization in Montreal. And it was interesting because I learned a lot just absorbing it, but I couldn't really participate much. I just kind of showed up and learned things. And I feel like that's going to be really helpful for me later on. Like just the experience I had just in different ways set some of the groundwork for, I mean, something similar happened with the political group I would attend in Toronto, where I went there a few times a month or something for different political meetings. And sometimes gave talks or whatever at them, stuff like that. Yeah, I found that really helpful, sort of helping build my confidence and stuff. To like, I wouldn't have gone to grad school if I hadn't have done that kind of thing. So it kind of helped me build up over time. And I think in the future, as I kind of, you know, write more or whatever I do to make money, I'm going to need variation in things because I am sort of like you where I do get tired of things pretty quickly, but I don't get tired of like, I want to keep doing the same kind of things over a long period of time. It's just the difference is that I can't do it for more than a few hours a day, each thing kind of thing at most. So that's my big problem is that I can't like if I see myself stuck doing something 40 hours a week, I just start to freak out. So I think that in the future, volunteering will be part of the sort of keep myself sane thing. So while actually being active and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. There is a, like the Rohingya from Myanmar, they have a little center or something like that around here that does have like volunteering opportunities. And one of them is teaching English and stuff like that. Like they're trying to get work and things like that. So, you know, learning English is helpful for that. So that is something I have considered doing. Like maybe I should push myself to get more involved with something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you are also, I mean, you know, your work is service related kind of thing, like you're helping someone. So I think that's it's different in some ways than someone that is, say, doing finance all week or something and then that doesn't feel like they have an opportunity to give back or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess.
So I don't know. I think so. So the next question is there a situation where you would follow a new Muhammad type figure? Like if it just really seemed like this guy was bringing some of the more of the good stuff from the big man and wanted you guys to follow him or her. So
yeah, fuck no. So here's the thing. If I was genuinely convinced that there was a new prophet, then that would necessarily negate the previous prophet. Right? Yeah. Like from an Islamic perspective, Muhammad is the final prophet. That's like a big part of the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if I was genuinely convinced, then yeah, you know, I've been convinced for some reason. So that is what it is. But if I were, I wouldn't maintain belief in Islam and also believe in some new prophet. Is this an Ahmadi guy, a Qadiani? I'm wondering.
I don't know, but a lot of the questions sort of revolved around, I mean, just to give my answer quickly, like I don't know, I try to keep an open mind. So if there was a new Muhammad type figure, if you know, I'll even keep an open mind about the old Muhammad type figure.
I was going to say. But, broke, don't.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the other questions we had sort of related to this in different ways too, where not Muhammad specifically, but I think a lot of people that are willing to be open to the fact that other people are religious, but are not really sure that other people actually do believe it, kind of thing, you know? So we've got a bunch of questions about related things like, you know, do you guys actually believe in demons or something like that kind of thing? And, or do you guys, you know, what is, can you actually be possessed and stuff like that? Like, you know, stuff that people, like, I think that there's this sort of like cultural overlay that people think is, they find it, they're skeptical about that the most. Like, they think that that's the, it's like almost like the entry point to the religion has to be the least likely thing that exists, kind of thing or something, you know what I mean? And I think both you and I at very least kind of see it the opposite way, maybe, is that there's sort of like a few key things that seem extremely important, and then the claims that extend from it are less interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, a lot of that is like vocabulary differences, that it's like, why is that such a sticking point? Like the idea of, say, possessions. Okay, so we have mental illness and that's acceptable, but the idea of like framing it in terms of a possession is, obviously there are salient differences in the way that those two things are conceived, but I think the fundamental truth there is like not so difficult to reconcile there, that like, you know, sometimes people, things happen in their mind that they, you know, that they're, it's out of their control. They feel like something is dominating their psychology, or like that's, I don't know. Is that so crazy to believe? It almost seems weird to, I don't know. Like, why does it need to be phrased in this particular way? I remember one time on Something Awful, I was trolling in GBS about saying that, I don't know if I was saying that I didn't believe in the weather, but basically I was saying that like I believe that angels controlled the weather, and essentially just framed it like I was explaining very basic the science of weather, you know, as I understood it from my like ninth grade science classes or whatever, but just framed it as terms of like, well, angels do this, they move the water down and then it like evaporates and goes into the clouds and da da da, and here's the Quran verses that demonstrate that that's true. And people were going crazy, and then there were some people that actually got what I was doing, like, he's just explaining things that we believe, but he's just saying this angel instead of this scientific term, it's not a big deal. So it was kind of cool that people actually figured out what I was doing.
Yeah, I think that the other thing where people get tripped up, I think we've talked about before, but it's where they see it almost as like a second set of rules, which just causes them trouble or something like that kind of thing, you know? And there's no necessary reason to have a second set of rules for any reason at all. So then it just seems like additional nonsense that ruins their life in some way or something. And I don't know. I mean, a lot of people do experience religion in that way. Like, that's what a lot of people have problems, because they feel like that's the trap they're in or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Or it could be a positive thing. A lot of people see that as a positive thing. Like, you know, so many people convert to Islam in prison. And I think part of that is that it kind of, like what I was saying earlier, that it gives meaning to a lot of like really mundane stuff. It structures your day, you know, gives you some purpose.
Yeah. So those were the questions that I had. I didn't have any more written out. So.
Okay, I guess that's it for this episode then.
So, okay, maybe we'll wrap it up for today then.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've done a bunch of these Q&A episodes, and it's been good to get through a lot of the questions. I know there's been people who've probably been waiting for us to get through their questions because they've been sitting in the mailbag for a couple months. But it's good to get through them, good to get some feedback from people and see what people are wanting to hear from us. We definitely are still planning to do guest episodes and like topical episodes about single topics and stuff. Yeah, it's just been a little bit of, I don't know, hasn't lined up the past couple weeks, but we'll get back into the swing of that.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for listening. The Twitter is at YouCan'tWinPod. You can send more questions there, and you can also do so on the Discord if you're subscribed to the Patreon. Thanks for listening, guys.